Hey, it's King Kaz here from Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. So due to the fact that COVID-19 is still happening around the world, sports can't happen at the current moment. So me and the boys here at Sports Odds and Ends are going to take some time to do a few special episodes that you're going to hear from us. We're going to be talking about esports and competitive gaming. I'm going to be covering Counter-Strike and going into depth with DJM, and JVZ will be doing the same with League of Legends and the LCS. We'll talk about why we are fans of these esports, how to watch these esports, and what it is to be a fan of these esports. And those are just a few things, as well as some of the strategies that go into the game and our understanding of the game as fans. So look out for that. Those are going to be episodes that are coming up. We're also going to have a few other special episodes coming down the pipeline, so be sure to check out the website sportsoddsandends.com, as well as follow us all on Twitter. DJM is Just Call Me DJM. I am King Kaz, and JVZ is JVZ. Thank you for listening to these special episodes, and I hope you and your loved ones stay safe.
What's up, everybody? DJM here. So as Kaz mentioned in the intro, this is going to be a special episode of Sports Odds and Ends. JVZ is here, Kaz is here, and I wanted to talk a little bit about esports, competitive gaming, and I wanted to get a little bit more insight into the games and get a little bit more information out there for you, the fly-by-night sports fan. Right now, since everybody's quarantined, a lot of things are being taken online, and that does wonders for the world of esports and competitive gaming. And I wanted to talk to the guys a little bit about their favorite games to watch and play in the world of esports. And we're starting this episode with JVZ. What's up, JVZ? You are going to, because I asked, you are going to tell me a little bit about League of Legends. So, yeah, let's just jump right into that one. It's the, by all accounts, the biggest competitive game in the world, or at least one of them, League of Legends. Tell me a little bit about League of Legends. Give me a quick primer on it.
So the game itself, first of all, if you're taking a plane, it's free. How they make money is you buy different characters that you can use in the game permanently. They have a couple characters that are kind of on rotation because they have over 100 different characters to play. Each of these, characters, champions, they call them, I think, each of them has like a different set of abilities, ranging from attack abilities to magic type abilities. It's kind of a fantasy setting. The actual game structure itself, the term is multiplayer online battle arena, which on its own doesn't mean anything, but it's used to describe the type of game where you have like a mini RPG that is played throughout the game. You start with your character being at level one, with no abilities, and then you kill little minions and other type of small characters throughout the game to level up your character, and then the objective of the game is to destroy the enemy's base on the other side of the map. It's kind of a little war game. The more you level up your character, the better your character is at completing objectives like destroying enemy towers that stand in between you and their base, and also protecting your own towers and protecting your own base.
So would you say that the game is a competitive battle system with attacking and defense, but to use a term from the fighting game world, the mechanics are RPG focused. Is that what you would say, with attacking and defense and magic? Is it kind of like that?
It's a little bit of that when knowing like what attacks counter what other attacks. Strategically, I think a lot of the game is about positioning, because you're looking at most of these games from like a top-down perspective. So you want to position your players in order to be in range of hitting their abilities, and then mechanically you want to be able to, like if you want to land a certain ability on an enemy champion, you need to aim, at least from top-down aim, so point your ability to fly in the right direction and hit them while they're trying to move around too and dodge. It's not a first person thing. It's top down, but still those aim mechanics, those split second mechanics, are important as well. And then strategically, I think much of the game revolves around interacting with your teammates and combining your abilities with your teammates' abilities. So maybe one character has the ability to stun, while another character has the ability to do a lot of damage to somebody. So if you stun somebody first, then they stand in one spot and you can hit them with a bunch of damage and kill off their character. And then once you get killed, then there's like a small respawn timer that grows over time. Towards the end of the game, when you get killed off, you got to sit there for a minute before your character respawns. And then so while during that period, the other team can complete objectives while you're not there to disrupt them.
Okay, two things on that one. Two things. You mentioned teams. How would you say teams generally are constructed? And on follow up on that one, when you mentioned when a player dies and they have to respawn, you mentioned objectives that have to be completed.
Yes.
Second question on that one. What are the objectives in this game? How are objectives completed? What are they? What do they need?
Okay, so team composition, it's 5-on-5. There's three kind of main quote unquote lanes throughout the map, which are kind of the visible paths that you can take from your base to the enemy's base. There's one the two teams' bases are in the bottom left corner and the top right corner of the map. And so there's one lane that just the diagonal line going straight down the middle. That's the middle lane. Then there's one lane that goes up the left side and across the top of the map. That's the top lane. And then the bottom lane is on the down the right side and across the bottom of the map. So there's usually one player on each team that plays in the top lane, the one player that plays in the middle lane, two players that play in the bottom lane, and one that kind of roams everywhere that they call the jungler, because in between those lanes is just a bunch of foliage, and the jungler kind of is a character that stays hidden for and roams around the jungle areas and then pops out of nowhere to initiate attacks usually. The top lane generally tends to be a tankier type of character. The middle lane tends to be, because of the way objectives are, some of the neutral objectives are laid out throughout the map, the middle lane tends to be a more magic focused character, because the middle lane is kind of close to one of the magic objectives. And the bottom lane usually involves one high damage dealer that is usually very squishy, very easy to kill, and another support character that is there to protect them. That's kind of the makeup of the five person lineup. Some teams have tried to experiment a little bit, and I think early on Riot Games, who makes League of Legends, tried to say that they're not trying to enforce any specific meta, but I think over time that's kind of what is in the same way that like tall people play near the basket in basketball, because it makes sense to put the tall people near the basket. The League of Legends has kind of worked its way into that specific five character meta. The objectives, there's kind of a river that divides the two sides of the map. And then on each, in each lane, there is a tower near the river, and then one a little bit further back, one, I believe, just outside the base, and one inside the walls that make up the outer base area, and then two near the inner base, and then the quote-unquote Nexus, which is the thing you have to destroy to win the game.
Is it just one map?
Yeah, there's just one. There's a couple other there's a couple other maps that are just not important, but like the main competitive game is played on a map called Summoner's Rift, and that's the map that looks like most traditional MOBA maps with the three lanes and the towers that you destroy along the way. Also, one thing I forgot, like just inside the towers that are inside the base, there is these things called inhibitors, which once you destroy them, they don't attack back, but once you destroy them, then your team on that particular lane spawns minions that that are much stronger, or like a, along with the normal wave of minions that get spawned along that lane, there's one super minion that comes along with it that is especially difficult to destroy, but also gives more gold. The normal game mechanic is you kill these minions and level up your character, and then as your character also as you kill them, if you deliver the killing blow on these minions, you will gain gold as well, which you can use to spend on items that help boost your characters.
Are you killing these minions while playing competitively at the same time?
Yes. So it's kind of a balance. Like, do you kill the minions or do you attack the enemy characters? Killing the minions is kind of known as farming, because it's kind of calm. You kind of just sit there and wait for them to get close to dead, and then you deliver the final blow. So you can, when you do that, you get gold from that. And then you can use that gold to buy items. So that's the early game. Like the first, I would say the first 5 minutes or so is very much you stay in lane and you try to farm and build your character up. Once you get to level 6, that's when you get your first ultimate ability, which is like your strongest ability. And once you get that, then you can start getting a little bit more creative and trying to roam around the map. Some teams get ambitious and try to make plays before that happens, but usually that's somewhat unexpected.
All right, just to circle back one more time, you mentioned objectives. Yes. What are the objectives in a match?
You kind of have to take these down in order. So basically take down all the towers in one lane and then destroy the two towers near the Nexus and then kill the Nexus. That's the main objective. There's a couple neutral objectives scattered around the map. Early game, there's a neutral monster called the Rift Herald, where if you kill it, then you can respawn this big monster in the middle of the lane, and it acts as a battering ram that will take down a huge chunk of a tower's life. So you can use it to help kind of charge through. It's a siege mechanic. One of the other objectives is the dragon. It's like random. Each dragon that spawns, I think it spawns like every 5 minutes or so, has a random element, like a fire, earth, water, or wind. I think they call them Infernal Drake, Cloud Drake, Mountain Drake, and Ocean Drake. Each one provides a different boost to your team for the rest of the game. So if you kill the Ocean Drake, then you get better healing and better cooldowns on, or lower cooldown timers on your special abilities. If you kill the Infernal Drake, you get better damage during, just better damage overall, which can help you kill the opposing players better. And then Cloud is better movement speed, and Mountain is better damage to objectives like towers and inhibitors and neutral objectives as well. And then I think probably one of the more important neutral objectives, once at 20 minutes, that Rift Herald objective goes away and gets replaced by kind of this massive serpent creature called Baron. When you kill that, then your team gets a boost. At least everybody that's alive when that happens
is
gets a boost.
Is everyone on the field trying to kill Baron? Is that what part of this?
It is definitely a target objective to get. Because once you kill it, you get like a couple minutes, I want to say 2.5 minutes of this quote unquote Baron boost, where your minions get beefed up, and so that's better for taking down objectives in all the lanes, and also your team has a little bit better protection during fights, and just better abilities during fights as well. So
does that happen in every match?
Yeah, it's a main objective in every match, and it spawns on a regular interval as well. So if you lose Baron once, then your objective for the next couple minutes is to just defend, and then you can try to kill Baron the next time it spawns as well. These neutral objectives are so important that you can also use them to bait the other team. Like you can start the objective, and then that forces them to come after you, and to prevent you from getting it. Whoever delivers the killing blow on the objective gets it. So sometimes a team can do all the work to bring Baron's health all the way down to almost zero, and then another team jumps in and steals it at the last second. It's a very low percentage strategy, but sometimes if you're desperate, that's something you can do. Or since some of these neutral enemies will fight back, Baron will do a lot of damage while you try to kill it. It can sap your team's health while you're trying to complete this objective, and during that process, another team can come in and kill your characters off while you're trying to take down this neutral objective. So there's a big strategic, there's a huge strategic mini game played around the objectives themselves. And do you take the objective? Do you focus on the objective itself, or do you focus on the team that's trying to attack you while you're taking the objective? Do you use the objective as a decoy? Do you just fake going after the objective and then kill the other team when they come after you? If you're the team that's winning, Do you try to force the objectives so that this opposing team has to come out and fight you, or do you, instead of just turtling in the base and trying to farm minions to try to catch up on level? So I think those of you that are used to listening to this show know that I get super nerdy about rules and incentives in games and how the whole chess match that goes behind the strategy of the game. There's tons of that in this game, and I think that's what's drawn me to this game.
Well, since you mentioned the meta and how much goes into the game within the game, and this is a competitive 5-on-5 game, tell me about some of the teams, say, if I were, I am a novice to League of Legends. Give me like two or three of the teams that I would want to check out, see if they're playing, if there's a big live stream, or if somebody is live streaming. Who would I tune in to see League of Legends at a high level?
Well, you can catch all of the matches and all the VODs at lolesports.com. They actually have a really good kind of VOD system where they also not only just record everything, and just put them up in YouTube videos, but they also hide the scores. If these are, they hide the results. So like you're not spoiled until you actually like watch the whole thing. So that's kind of nice. The main teams to watch, like I would say the best teams are in Asia. So, SK Telecom T1, that's the team where you would find Faker, who is probably one of the best players in the world, or the name that is kind of most synonymous with the game. The Chinese league is also doing incredibly well, and sometimes I struggle with the names there because they're changing all the time as teams like drop sponsors and stuff, but I know Invictus Gaming and I think Fun Plus Phoenix, I think some of the more recent champions, world champions, I mean. But most of my focus is on the North American League, partly just because it's in English. The broadcast is in English, and these are teams that I can, like, when they go on tour and they do an event close to me, I can go. I'm better likely to be able to see an event that's in the North American League than I am in any other leagues. So the hallmark teams in the North American League are there's kind of a big four traditional group, which is TSM, Team Solo Mid, CLG, Counter Logic Gaming, Team Liquid, and Cloud9 are kind of the traditional organizations, but there's been some other newer organizations that have made their mark as well. I know Dignitas, Immortals, those are kind of organizations that you're used to seeing around esports. Evil Geniuses is a new team this year that has made a pretty big splash. They finished second in the regular season during their first split. TSM was for a long time, or TSM and CLG for a long time were the two top teams, and then Team Liquid, I think there was kind of a meme that they would never finish above fourth for a long time, and then they splashed a bunch of money once franchising started, and then they won four straight splits since then.
What Cloud9 is a split?
A split season. So instead of having just one season, one big long season, they have two split seasons. The spring split, and each season is, since there's 10 teams, each season consists of every team playing every other team twice. So 18 games total.
Are they weekly, daily?
It's usually two games. It's 9 weeks, so two games per week, and then playoffs after that. And then any tiebreakers are settled by just playing a match. No like weird rules when it comes to tiebreakers. It's just if you tie another team, you in the standings
play a tiebreaker.
You just play a tiebreaker match, and each match lasts about 45 minutes, so it's pretty easy to do that. And it's kind of easy to kind of schedule out a weekend. You know, these five matches are going to play. So if you want to watch the third match, you know that's going to be roughly around the third hour. So if you don't want to watch the other matches, you can kind of pick and choose that way.
Since you mentioned split seasons, you said one was spring, and when was the other one?
The other one is summer. The way it's structured is you have spring split, and then the winner of spring split goes into this mid-season international tournament called the mid-season invitational, which is just the winners of every regional competition. So North America sends their winner, Korea sends their winner. It's like a mini world championship. If you were to compare it to, say, soccer, it would be like the Confederations Cup instead of the World Cup, where, like, the World Cup, you send, like, the three best teams from every region or so. But the Confederations Cup is just the one best team from, like, the year before. So it's like a mini tournament, but But it's also kind of a nice regional tournament, and it's nice to be like the representative of your region. And so the summer split is the one that kind of determines, and it's kind of different for every region how they decide, but the summer split, on top of being its own championship that you want to compete for, the results of the summer split help determine who the representatives are for the world championship. And the world championship takes place in the fall. So that's kind of a big month-long tournament that takes place in one place around the world. I think last year was somewhere in Asia. I can't remember, but
the world championship is similar to the Olympics or the World Cup in that it does take place in a different place.
Yes. All the teams converge on this one area, and a lot of the teams that are participating will actually go there a little bit earlier and set up like a boot camp over there. It happens every year instead of like every 4 years like the World Cup does. But it's more like a Champions League because it's team based. It's not these are not international teams made up by countries. They're the actual same league teams that that play throughout the season, and just if you play well throughout the season, then your team
will get to go to the world championship.
Yeah, we'll get to go to the world championship. Yeah. Okay. Traditionally, North American teams have not done so well. It's kind of weird the way it always plays out, but Cloud9 does not do a great job of winning the North American League. They've choked a lot of times when they've gotten to the finals there, but they've always done extremely well in world or not extremely well, but they've always done better than their other North American teams have done. Even the champions of North America, whoever they've been, whether it's been TSM or Team Liquid, those teams have always done terribly. They've failed to make it out of the group stage in the world championships, while Cloud9 has managed to get a little bit further usually. And I think a couple years ago, they actually made the semifinals. But traditionally the Asian teams have dominated the world championships. More recently the European teams, like G2 and Fnatic have made a strong run, at the title. G2 actually won the mid-season invitational tournament as well, last year. So that was a big sign that kind of the gap between the Eastern teams and the Western teams is kind of closing a little bit.
All right. Given that we're talking about some teams, this is a 5-on-5 game, and with most games where rosters are not massive, individual players can make a lot of difference. Who, say, in the North American scene of League of Legends are some players that I, a new viewer, a novice, a fly-by-night sports fan, might want to keep an eye on? Who are some players that stand out?
There's a couple traditional names that I think have been around for a really long time. So I think Bjergsen is one of them for Team Solobid. He's their mid laner and has been there for, I think, like 6 or 7 years or so. He's been there so long that they've actually given him like a mini ownership stake in the team, I think. And I think they had to get like a special exception for that. The other big name who used to play for TSM is Doublelift. I don't want to say he's bounced around, because each time he goes to another team, they have like immediate success, and then he stays there for, you know, 2 or 3 years. Doublelift has also been around for a long time. Those two players have won a lot of championships, some of them together. Doublelift plays in the AD carry position of the bottom lane. I think those are probably the two biggest names. Probably because I'm struggling to think of other names that are not like imported players. Yeah, I mean, Doublelift is probably the most prominent player that originated in North America. Bjergsen came from Europe, but he's been around so long that like his work visa and all that stuff, he's considered North American now. You're only allowed two players on your team that are non-North American players. So it's...
Does that rule apply across the board? Like internationally?
I don't know if it does, but I know it does for North America, and I think that's partly to help like develop local talent instead of just bring in all the Koreans you can. But I know part of the process is like once a player has been around for a long time, then they get kind of quote unquote native status, and then you can start bringing in more imports after that. But yeah, it is somewhat strategic to decide how do you use your import slots. Some teams have gone, just get the best Korean player you can. And some teams have tried to be a little bit more strategic about it. Like maybe you get a European player.
Do these teams, like American sports, do they have like a scouting department, a developmental department? Do they have coaches?
It varies from team to team, and there is an academy league, a quote unquote academy league, and you can watch those games as well on broadcasted on the same website. So it's nice that it's kind of all in the same spot. I think it's somewhat close to baseball, where players can kind of get called up and sent back down, and sometimes the academy roster is. I mean, those guys are essentially the backups for the main roster. But you have to declare in advance who's going to play in the academy game every week and who's going to play in the main game every week. There are some teams take the academy more seriously than others. Since this is still rather new, I think the league's been around for like a decade or so. Some teams have, and there's been a lot of fluctuations between some teams dropping out of the league and some teams, during the promotion and relegation period of the league, some teams were just moving up and down. Nowadays, I don't want to say things have settled yet, but I do feel like Cloud9 has been kind of the one organization that has actually taken player development very seriously. There was a 10-player draft that was held a couple years ago, and Riot organized an event called Scouting Grounds where they actually like got a bunch of the top solo queue players that actually just played the regular game. But like the top ranked ones, and had them compete in a little mini tournament, and then staged a draft afterwards. And Cloud9 actually went through the process of buying two other teams' draft picks so that they could nab three guys from there. And then a couple of those guys have, one of them they were able to sell to another team. One of them is currently on their roster now. But they've been an organization that has done incredibly well with subbing players in and out, and just being able to make up for like, oh, this player is sick this week, and just the backup comes out of nowhere and just dominates the league that week. And I think that's, they've taken their coaching structure very seriously, their player development structure very seriously, and they, by doing that, they haven't had to splash a bunch of money on signing the best new international signing that they can.
So you mentioned a draft, and I love drafts. I'm a dork for drafts. League of Legends has a draft system?
I think that might have just been a one-time thing, or maybe something that they'll do every couple years. It's more the academy system, and then signing people to the academy, and then it's mostly handled through quote unquote free agency. The draft is a little bit less important, just because like it almost seems like there's with the solo queue ranking system, there's always kind of a tier of like what the next best free agent that you can sign is, and a draft hasn't really played into it so far. But I wouldn't be surprised if the league eventually grows to the point where that becomes a thing every year. But I think there's so much roster turnover throughout the year I don't think teams want to be restricted to, like, you can only the concept of like what is or is not a rookie is kind of a little bit muddy when it comes to leagues. So or what is or is not an amateur player. There is a college league scene, but it's, I think it just exists to exist and not to feed players into the professional scene. Although there's nothing stopping anybody from drafting, or not quote unquote, not from signing a player from the college scene. I think it's not like the NFL where there's a clear gap, or the NBA where there's like an age rule or anything like that. I think
it's just whoever you want to sign, you can sign.
Yeah, you just sign whoever you want to sign, and sometimes these guys get signed incredibly young, and and then they play in the academy system for a little bit, and then eventually work their way to the main roster.
Okay.
But yeah, right. there's so it's not like the NBA where you can share minutes with somebody out of position. Because you have to rest. These are 45-minute games. The player who starts plays all the way to the end of the game at each position. So a quote unquote substitute is somebody that you would deploy in the middle of a 5-game series or so when you're trying to make adjustments for something that's not working. There's no gradual thing. Either you play a match or you don't play a match. There's no in between.
Okay. Just one quick question. You mentioned adjustments. Who makes those adjustments? Is it the players? Do they have a coach? Is there a coaching staff? Who makes those decisions?
Yeah, usually there's multiple coaches, but there's usually one that kind of is takes the title of like a head coach. Before each match, there's a character selection process where, because you have like over 100 different characters to choose from. And this is like its own little 10-minute mini game on its own where you ban 5 characters, where each team bans 5 characters and then selects 5 characters. And they have like a specific order in how they do that to make it fair. So that's where the coach is most important in helping the players select those characters, to come up with the right team composition and the right strategy to counter the other team. They do set some strategic instructions for the team, but once the match starts, they have to leave the stage and they cannot communicate with the team anymore until the end of the match.
Not even in game?
Not even in game. So it's once they leave the stage, it's up to the players to decide strategy and call plays. I think that's one of
the. Are there breaks in the matches?
There are no breaks. There's breaks in between the matches if there's like a 5-game series or so. There's breaks in the match if somebody calls a timeout for whatever reason, which is not something that you're only allowed to do this if like you accidentally spill water on your keyboard or something, or you think there's a bug and you can call you can call for a break in the match and then have the representatives from Riot come out and actually investigate and go through the telemetry of the game itself to see whether a bug occurred. In general, like, you don't really need instant replay. There's not, the game itself does its own refereeing. That's what programming does. But occasionally there are glitches that that need to be sorted out. And so the game itself is actually pretty good about being able to roll it back to a specific point in the game and just restart from a certain point. So if something unfair does happen in the game, they can roll it back to before that happened and restart from there. So that's one thing nice about the quote unquote refereeing in an esport versus a traditional sport.
Well, you mentioned that being one thing you liked about this. Just to wrap up here on League of Legends, give me a quick rundown of what it is that you enjoy about this game. I mean, I know you mentioned things like the numbers and the rules and how those things go into the strategy of the game. But just real quick to wrap up, what is it that you dig about League of Legends, JVC?
Unfortunately, what I dig about it is part of what makes it hard to get into sometimes, but there, at least from a very high level perspective, it's a bit of a chess game. It's with a little bit of timing, a little bit of a lot of positioning strategy. And on top of that, like, a lot of macro level play. Like, you want to, sometimes you move two characters and have them attack one character on the other team. That's you've got an advantage there, but because the other team sees you do that, then they know that the other side of the map is free to do other things. So just that, those mind games that are involved in doing that, it reminds me of football in a way, with all the strategic complexity. But I know that can be a bit of a turnoff, because football has a ton of different rules that apply differently to different players on the field. Hopefully the fact that there's only five characters on there and they're all subject to the same set of rules, that makes things a little bit less complicated. Visually, I think it's kind of difficult with 100 different characters to choose from to keep track of what characters do what. But I think if you watch after a little bit, you can kind of get an idea of which characters get played in which lane for what reason. Sometimes that meta shifts around a little bit because Riot is always making patch changes to the game to fix bugs and try to balance out different characters. And so with each patch, there's kind of a bit of an adjustment period where team, sometimes these patches occur during the middle of the season too, and so once that happens, then the bans start shifting to different characters, and then the characters that people like to pick change a little bit. There's a ton of strategy that goes into that. There's strategy for, like I said, how you move around the map, how you attack different resources at different times throughout the game. There's early game strategies, mid game strategies, late game strategies. There's a team fighting is a pretty big part of it. Like, your five team members against the other five team members in the middle of the river. Like, what's going to happen? How do you approach that? Or if you're down by a lot, if you're way behind in the game, then how do you find a way to come back by, you know, slowly picking off players from the other team when they're separated from their teammates, because, you know, 5-on-5 you can't take the other team, but maybe your three best players can take down their one worst player, and that can help you claw back and bridge this gap between your two teams. There's just a ton of strategy involved, and that's not even talking about, like, the different items that you can buy, which then give your characters different boosts. So So it's a very multi-layered game. I wouldn't even say I'm at the point where like I even know all of the items. Sometimes the casters like mention an item in the game that you can buy that that like I've never even heard of before. So it's very deep. The barrier to entry is to actually play the game itself. It's not that hard to get started, but to learn it at an expert level, like I'm not even close to halfway there yet. So there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to get into, and like you can spend, you know, several years watching this sport and still not know everything that's going on, but it's still somewhat fun to watch sometimes. I hope I didn't undersell it there, but yeah, it's the strategy that gets me interested in it.
All right. Awesome, JVZ. Thank you so much. I know I definitely learned a lot, and I hope everybody out there listening did too.